one spare. Just one. Couple yeah. there. Okay, there's a couple more spare seats back there. There's one here. We're just getting people to come through with their cake and their tea. I'm so excited. Actually, that wasn't going to be my welcome because we've got about 30 seconds. But I will say welcome to everybody. But if there aren't enough chairs, I might have to ask some High Street ladies to sit on the floor cross-legged or go up to the Dizzy Heights in the balcony. You will still see. So I just want everyone to be comfortable, seated, watered, fed, and everything else. I'm so excited to see you, I can't tell you. Looking out like this, I always imagine you're all sitting in my lounge. So I hope you feel safe, I hope you feel at ease, I hope you feel excited about what we're going to be learning. I am Priscilla Malkin, actually, if you know me from work. Or at church, I'm Prue Malkin. If you want to find me on Facebook, I'm Priscilla Malkin. So that's just a bit of confusion. A huge thank you to Elspeth, who's come from C3 Church in Cambridge to speak tonight. Thankfully, you won't hear too much from me. It will mostly be from Elspeth. But what I want to say is welcome, because I don't recognise everybody. I know we've got some ladies from Peacemakers. I know we've got friends of friends. I know people have travelled afar. I could say who's come the furthest, but we won't do that. We'll just say South Africa. Well done. Where's Lizelle? Yeah, there you go. And Aline. There you go. And everyone else. But it's good to be together. Shall we just pray? I do feel excited. I was excited today at work. I don't think people knew what was going on, but there you go. So, Lord, we just want to offer you up this evening and just ask and pray, Lord, that you would speak to ladies. I pray and ask, Lord, that this would be a real safe haven for them tonight. Lord, I pray and ask, Lord, that as we share and listen and laugh and cry and whatever we need to be doing, Lord, I pray and ask, Lord, that your Holy Spirit would come and that you would fill this room. Already I feel your presence, and I thank you for that. I thank you, Lord, that you're so interested in us. You don't want to leave us alone. You're there for us. I just pray and ask, Lord, that you would be in tonight and that you would be blessed and we would be blessed through others, I pray. Amen.
Amen.
Brilliant. So welcome. Who likes the title, Chosen Not Forsaken? Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm loving that. I can say that because I didn't come up with it, so it's not like I'm blowing my own trumpet. It gives us such hope, isn't it, to know that we're chosen, not forsaken. So that's brilliant. You all look radiant out there. Beautiful. Do you feel beautiful? Maybe tell the person next to you, ladies, how beautiful they look this evening. Okay, I didn't tell you to say what you're going to be doing all weekend. Just tell them they're beautiful and then we can move on. So can you believe we put 100 chairs out earlier? Well, Kevin did. But and we're still putting more chairs out and people are still coming. So that's brilliant. They knew you were coming, Elspeth. That's what it, yeah. See?
You can't leave now.
So, story time. I love sharing with you girls and it's so good to be together. So how did tonight come about? Well, God has been drawing my attention to mental well-being for about 2 years. I'm sure like me, you've been made aware of this issue on the radio or in the news. So many people face some form of mental health difficulty at some point in their lives. And certainly, all of us will come into contact with people who are suffering at some level. What do you think to the statistics on the screen? Did you have a look? Were you shocked? Could you relate? One in four people will suffer with some form of mental stress in their life, whether it's simply feeling run down, right through to deeper depression. Self-harm, body image, memory loss, it's a very wide spectrum, and women are more likely to suffer than men. That's why we're here tonight. I want to be super honest with you and say that although I haven't suffered anything like some people do, I have been through a period of depression some years back. And at 27, I suffered with depression, although I learned a lot through that time and can see how God not only helped me through it, but taught me to slow down, chill out a bit before having kids. I never want to go there again. But God doesn't waste anything. He takes us through things so we can help other people. So, I'm not back there. But ironically, I'm not having an easy time at the moment. A few of you may have known, but many won't, because stresses we face, emotionally or mentally, aren't necessarily visible. Thank you for your concern and kindness for my arm. It's not broken. But we can feel very broken inside, sometimes, and very alone. Please believe me, I'm not saying this at all for sympathy, but I didn't want you to look at me and think she's all right, she's got it all together, because I certainly haven't. Sometimes it would be helpful to ourselves and others if we could wrap a bandage around our head to show we're not quite feeling all right ourselves. Believe me, I'm looking forward to learning lots from Elspeth tonight, as well as you. So this is for my benefit, as well as you, ladies. So before Christmas, many things had contributed to me not feeling okay. Don't tell my boss. I work full-time at RAF Lakenheath as a commander's secretary, and I'd had to learn a new computer system in October. I didn't find it very user-friendly. If I'm honest, I'm right-handed. It was like going into work every day and writing with my left hand. It was incredibly difficult for me. I don't know if anyone's been there, could be an age thing, but it was difficult. My workload had increased so much that I was struggling to keep up. There were other things also, and I'd ended up coming home from work each day, hiding under a blanket and watching the cheesiest Christmas movies I could. Sadly, and that was just to, you know, when you watch something, it just washes over you. So sadly, on Christmas Day, I woke up with total mental exhaustion. I hadn't broken my arm and may even have looked fairly okay, but I couldn't think straight at all. I couldn't work out how to cook the family Christmas dinner. I wanted to, I just couldn't. My mind couldn't handle it. The meat and the vegetables, the timing, I could only just handle peeling vegetables at the sink. Tim took over completely, that's my husband, and it was all okay. But I felt so mentally drained, it was even a struggle to eat a La Hogue pastry straight out of the oven because of anxiety and having a nervous tummy. Can anyone relate? I love being near water. We live at the marina in Iceland, and Tim took me out on our small fishing boat purely to try and relax me. I'm sure everyone on the marina Christmas Day wondered what was going on. But on return, even the present opening was too much. I chose to sit and watch others open presents while my mind focused on the where am I going to put everything? Strange. It sounds ridiculous unless you've been there, right? I still wanted to have the family over and manage to eat with them and laugh with them. But in the afternoon, all I could handle was playing board games. They relaxed me and kind of washed over me and didn't take too much effort. Wonder if you can relate to that. It's a bit like peeling the vegetables and playing games. So I went to the doctors in January for an MOT, and she took blood tests, and all was well, at least physically. I actually felt listened to, and the doctor asked if I was looking after myself mentally. Mentally? I can't remember if I'd ever been asked this question before. So ladies, are you looking after yourself mentally? Do you know how to look after yourselves mentally? I hope tonight will bless you, encourage you, reassure you, and give you some good, godly, and medical advice on how to be kind to yourself and look after yourself mentally. So before I move on, here's a few things I've learned and continually learn. It's good to take time out and rest. Clearly says it in the Bible. Our whole body benefits from this. The other Saturday, after a busy week at work, I remember saying to Tim, I need to look after my head today. And I kind of thought, whoa, what a strange thing to say. I spent time with God. I read my Bible. I journaled encouraging scriptures. I drank tea, Lady Grey. I wrote to people and messaged people who were on my mind. I went for a cycle ride. I even walked a dog, a borrowed dog called Chip, for miles. The poor thing. Yeah, the poor thing. Oh dear. Yeah. Do you remember that, Natasha? Poor Chip. Yeah. But it was good to take time out. In fact, at one point, I think I was running with the dog. Anyway, I found it relaxing. But God's recently has been speaking to me about seeking silence. I read a Center Parcs magazine recently while on holiday, and I was interested in something that it talked about. It was about noise. It was saying how much noise we are surrounded by all the time. It was talking about how people are looking for kettles that boil quietly and washing machines that spin quietly. Life is so busy and noisy, don't you think? Yeah. You're surrounded. How liberating when I switch my phone to silent at times, when I know it will irritate me when it beeps and demands my attention. I look for moments when I literally sit in silence with God and listen and zone out with him. He never lets me down, and he's always desperate to see me hide away with him. So, being honest and sharing with people, I'm all about getting together and sharing things that are sometimes taboo subjects, a bit like perimenopause, which I'm experiencing at the moment. How can we help each other if we don't talk about them? It's okay to be a Christian and not be okay. God is always good and is there for us in whatever we go through. So I love listening to worship songs and allowing the lyrics to wash over me. I looked up a song called You're Gonna Be Okay. This is by Jen Johnson from Bethel. And Jen wrote this when her husband Brian was going through a nervous breakdown. One scripture that inspired her was, when life is heavy and hard to take, go off by yourself. Enter the silence, bow in prayer, don't ask questions. Wait for hope to appear. Don't run from trouble, take it full face. The worst is never the worst. And that can be found from Lamentations 3, verses 28 to 30. I challenge you to dare to seek silence. Get away from the noise. Talk to God. Tell him your struggles with absolute honesty. Look after yourself. Find out what works for you. How do you relax? Do you love being in God's creation? Do you love a sunrise, a sunset? Being near the ocean, listening to worship music, booking a beauty treatment, allowing yourself to curl up with a book and a mug of hot chocolate and an open fire. Go on a retreat. Just book into a hotel for a night. If you want to be around people, though, arrange a night out or invite some friends over. So, funny, after my Christmas Day experience, the next day, Boxing Day, Tim and me went and hid in a bird hide at Lackford Lakes. That was a great tonic for me. I went back to work, talk openly with my boss and about the workload and changes, and changes have been put in place. Thank you, God, that you care so much for your children. We are certainly chosen by you and loved unconditionally. So, now we're just gonna. I felt like I rushed through that. Sorry. We're gonna watch a 3-minute video clip now, if that's okay, Steve. And it's basically reminding us women who we are in God. And I'm not going to jump back up here immediately. We're probably just going to take a minute to just sit in silence, because I think it's good for you to digest things. And that's what I've been learning. So we're ready to roll. Thank you. Thank you.
You are beautiful. You are smart. You are funny. You are kind. You are unique. You are worthy of love and affection. You are never too much, and you are always enough. You are precious. You are a diamond, a rose, a pearl, the most stunning of all God's creation. You are worth more than you could ever imagine. Worth more than the numbers on the scale, or the hair product you use, or the shoes you wear. More than how many girls wish they were you, or how many guys wish they had you. More than the price tags on your clothes, or the percentage at the top of your math test, or even the number of followers you have on Twitter. Your worth surpasses all earthly things, because in the eyes of the Lord God, you are loved, and you are worth dying for. Regardless of who you think you are, whether you model in a magazine, or you model pottery with grandma, whether you're on the hot list or the not list, whether you're head cheerleader or a high school dropout, whether you're Miss Popular or you've never had anyone you could call a friend, whether you love yourself and love your life, or you can't stand to look in the mirror and you feel as if everything in your life is falling apart, whether you're such a winner or you feel like the world's biggest failure, regardless of who you think you are, the reality is that you deserve someone who would give up their life for you, because you are powerful and strong and capable. Read about the women in the Bible. Esther, Ruth, Martha, Mary. These women changed the world forever. And inside of you, each and every one of you is a woman with that same power and that same strength and that same world-changing capability. And your responsibility is to find that woman and to set that woman free. This is who you are. And any voices in your mind that try and tell you differently are from the enemy. And the next time you hear them, this is what you say. You say, nuh-uh, not me, Satan. I am a daughter of the living God, cherished, loved, and adored above all things by the Creator of all things for the glory of Him who is greater than all things. I am awesome. And please, don't you forget it.
Encouraging to hear, isn't it? I feel like some women here really needed to hear that, and I tell you to go and listen to it when you get home. Just look it up on YouTube. His name's John Jorgensen. It's amazing. Play it every day if you need to. So, I spoke earlier about worship songs, and so I'm going to invite Sandrine up. And she's going to lead us in a song. It's kind of taken from the title this evening, Chosen Not Forsaken. And if you don't know the song, just concentrate on the words that will come up, because it's absolutely incredible. But I do need to mention, I do need to say something. This is just family. We upset people in the village with our parking. I'm really sorry. But there's a white Nissan Micra parked really, really badly. I'm really sorry. So I don't know if that belongs to anybody. Just sneak out the back. Someone will help you repark it. Sorry. Hope that didn't ruin the moment. But thank you, Sandrine. We're going to stretch our legs now and our voices.
Good evening, ladies. Shall we stand?
Who am I that the highest king would welcome me? I was lost, but he brought me in. Oh, his love for me. Oh, his love for me. Who the sun sets free. Oh, is free indeed. I'm a child of God. Yes, I am. Free at last, he has ransomed me. His grace runs deep. While I was a slave to sin, Jesus died for me. Yes, he died for me. Who the sun sets free, oh, is free.
I am chosen.
I am chosen, not forsaken. I am who you say I am. You are for me, not against me. I am who you say I am.
I am chosen.
You are.
in my Father's house. In my Father's house, there's a place for me.
I'm a child of God.
Yes, I am.
Okay, so now it's a privilege to welcome Elsbeth. Elsbeth Darley, who just put John and Jane on a plane to New Zealand Wednesday night. What I love about Elsbeth, so she goes to C3 Church in Cambridge, which I've visited, and go to Breathe and all that. Yeah, brilliant. But she's she loves Jesus. That's the first thing I wanted to say about Elsbeth. And then I wanted to say she's a PA to Steve and Angie Campbell. C3. I've got to put my glasses on, sorry. She's got a degree and Master of Philosophy from Cambridge University. I can't even read half this stuff. It's not important, but she's got a Master's degree in Psychology. I'm going to leave it. You can explain. You can explain if you want to. Talk about your job. Anyway, I'm going to hand over. But we're in safe hands, I can assure you.
There we go. Is that on? That's good. Okay. I did the one thing I wasn't supposed to do and I put it on mute. So the rest of the evening will be great after that. So I'm Elsbeth Darley. I'm currently in psychology at the moment, so I'm doing a doctoral program, which means I'm actually working in psychology and trying to study at the same time. But my background is in theology. So they're my two passions, people and God. So it's a real privilege to get to do both and to be here tonight and to see so many faces as well. I think I was anticipating about 20 or 30. So to have a full house, it's really brilliant. Now, I know that among you there will be a lot of Christians here, and there'll also be a lot of people that would say you're not a Christian, don't believe in God. It's so good to have as many of you as we can tonight. And what I'm about to say will be very, very practical, and it should really bless and benefit you in whatever walk of life, whether or not you are familiar with anxiety, depression, mental distress, all of these buzzwords or not. We're going to kind of pick up the pace as we go along. So the first part of tonight, then, I'm going to talk a little bit about definitions, what we're going to focus on. So the slides behind us that were rolling earlier were saying about how one in four of us in a year might experience anxiety or depression. So we're going to look a little bit about what that means, and I think it's something we're all a bit susceptible to. We will be touching on other things, a bit about postnatal depression, OCD, some other of these buzzwords. But our main focus tonight will be depression, anxiety. The one takeaway point, if there's one thing that you remember from tonight, I want it to be this, that your beliefs, how you view yourself and how you view the world around you, impacts upon your behavior and your emotions. So belief comes before behavior. So we're going to make tonight a bit practical. We've got a flip chart here. We're going to do a bit of Q&A as well. There'll also be a toilet break, so you can also refuel and get some more cake and coffee. So we will make it interactive. But before we talk about behaviour, before we talk about what you can do and plans and tactics and all those fun, kind of fun things, you know, that we like to do, particularly as women, we like to, you know, have things in the diary and to fix things, to solve things. But the first thing that I want to talk about is belief. Who are you? Who do you think you are, and what about the world around you? Now, that seems like quite a big question, but it's a really important one, because if you are self-aware and you know how you're viewing the world, you know how you might cope in certain situations, you can bolster against the things of life. It's easier to self-manage. So self-awareness can help to self-management. So before we get going, one thing that I really want to do is, I'm aware it's a Friday night, we've all had busy weeks, I'm sure, stressful things, probably put children to sleep, had to move a white Nissan out of the way. So we've got all these things going on in our minds. So I'd love it if before we really get going and hit the ground running, we can just quieten ourselves down And that might mean for you just kind of shutting your eyes. It's a safe space. Nobody will steal anything from your purse. I'll keep my eyes open just in case. I'd love it if you could just quieten yourself down a little bit. Now, for the Christians here, I'd love it if you would just be open to God. And what that means is just simply saying to him, kind of, God, I welcome you tonight. I've got ears to hear what you would say to me through Elspeth. And if you're not a Christian here tonight, just be mindful of this present moment. Just be mindful of your breathing, what's going through kind of your mind at the moment, how you're feeling in your body, and just be receptive to what we're about to talk about. Okay, so let's get going. What are we talking about tonight then? So I've already mentioned depression now. I've decided to put the heaviest slide, first of all, get it out of the way. I'm not going to be reading off the slides, but they'll be there for you to refer to if you want to. So what I want to do, first of all, is to say that mental health is not black and white. It's not us and them. You either have it or you don't. We don't have mental health and mental, you know, perfection. Rather, it's a spectrum, it's a continuum. And all of us, depending on what our hormones are doing, the time of the month, we can all kind of fit across here, depending what's going on in life. Bereavement, distress, stresses, whatever's going on in life, we can all fall across the spectrum. But if you are a medical professional, or if you go to a GP or a counsellor, they'll probably refer to this criteria here. Which is just some of it. And they'll say, okay, does this person have five of these symptoms, experiences, and have they experienced them every day continually for the past 2 weeks? So it's more than just having a down day or a down couple of days or the result of bereavement, for example. So they'd look at you as an individual, but this is a bit of a guide, just so you've got an idea, a definition of maybe what depression is. Now, it's not just behavioural, it's not just bodily, feeling really tired in your body, feeling a bit numb emotionally, but it's also to do with your beliefs. So coming back to your beliefs before behaviour. So the one I've put in bold, it's still quite small, feelings of worthlessness. So believing that you're a bit worthless, that you are worthless, and excessive feelings of guilt. I was seeing a client and keeping everything anonymous, but this client had a really bad week, and they said, oh, Elspeth, I've had the worst week imaginable. I just didn't want to get out of bed. I could see she looked exhausted. So everything on the outside was saying that she had a really tough week, kind of mentally distressed. So we started talking about it. Well, what had happened this week? She said, oh, my son and his girlfriend came to visit. And they just popped in and out. They weren't going to stay for long, but he mentioned that he was hungry. So I went to the kitchen, made him some toast and a cup of tea, and I took it to him. And about 5 minutes later, he came back in the kitchen, and he had a knife, and he scraped the butter off his toast, and he put a spoon of sugar in the tea. And at that point, she broke down in tears, and she felt absolutely worthless, because for her, it was that huge sense of guilt. I'm his mother, and I forgot that he has sugar in his tea. So when we're talking about feelings of worthlessness and things, it's not just saying, oh gosh, I look really fat at this time of the month. It's more than that. It's a real sense of who you are. I'm so worthless. I can't even get a sugar in my son's cup of tea, and I didn't even put the butter on right. I'm a failure. So do you see how our beliefs can change a little bit as well? So the next one then is anxiety. So again, this is what kind of medical professionals will look to, and they'll say, right, does this person fit a criteria? Do they have three of these in the past 6 months? That isn't, again, a result of medication that you're taking. It's not at the result of other things like that. So this is what we're talking about when we're thinking about anxiety. Now, I've decided to look specifically at generalized anxiety, but there's other things, other types of anxiety that are much more specific, things like social anxiety, where you are absolutely anxious and you feel really distressed at the thought of being around other people because they might negatively judge you. Or it might be a health anxiety where you interpret your bodily sensations as catastrophic and something bad's going to happen, and goodness, if I get unwell, then that is, you know, lots of bad things are going to happen. You also get phobias as well. Generalised anxiety is a bit different. It really is that general worry. You call it the what-if worry, and it's the idea that you're perpetually thinking, well, what if this goes wrong? What if that goes wrong? What happens if I don't turn up on time? What about this? What about that? And that's really kind of what it is looking like. So with that as our basis, what I want to say, though, is that as helpful as labels can be, depression, anxiety are just words, and people's experiences are very different. So for one person, what depression is experienced like might be a red mist, and every morning it's that feeling of, I just see this red mist coming, and it's a sense of hopelessness, and it's a sense of heaviness. While for somebody else, depression might be, I don't feel anything. I can't even tell you what thoughts I'm thinking. I'm just existing. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to feel anything. So that's what it's a bit like. So at the start of tonight, it's not black and white, mental health, mental unhealthy people. We can all fall into it. Now, just as an example of maybe an experience then of mental distress, Prue's going to have a just chat to Ellie, who's here. I'm just going to ask her some questions about her own story. And again, this might resonate with you or with other people that you've heard about, but just remember that actually distress for everybody is a little bit different. Okay.
Shall we share this, Ellie?
Yeah.
Come on, then.
The lack of light, Steve,
is my eyesight, I think. So, this is Ellie. She's beautiful, inside and out. She's 18. Oh, there, you can have your own.
Oh, lovely.
Nice. Lovely. And she goes to West Suffolk College, and she's studying
on a media course.
Yeah. Works at TK Maxx in Bury St Edmunds as well.
Mm. Summed you up quite well. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Brilliant.
Oh, brilliant.
Hello.
That's a fun, that's a great picture. That is Ellie. So, let's start. What triggered it all, Ellie?
So I was in a relationship that was short, but really quite damaging. And there was rumours spread all around the school about me. My names were on the toilet walls. And it was a pretty awful school life that I had. My friends weren't really friends. And yeah, school was just a really toxic place to be. So I kind of masked it and got in trouble a lot. So that didn't really do me any favours. And then I moved schools. And that was, it was a lot better environment. But I still covered the pain I was feeling with different guys and relationships and things like that. And within school, self-harm kind of was almost like a trend. It was weird if you hadn't self-harmed and done things like that, but for me, I just hid everything, and I didn't want anyone to see that until I got home, really. But yeah, that was what triggered everything, really.
When did you ask for help?
So it's actually my mum and my grandma that kind of noticed my like low moods, and I was just constantly drained and exhausted. So we went to a doctor, and they sent me to a counsellor, but she was all right. She helped me put things in perspective, but she wasn't seeing things from a Christian perspective, so she was nothing really on what God did for me.
And so following on from that, where was God in all of it?
So during one of my breakups, I couldn't even like sleep very well. I couldn't sleep on my own. My mum had to stay with me. And I was just really quite ill for a short time. But what really got me through was constantly praying with mum and really worship songs. They were just incredible. Like the words, oh my goodness, like that's what helped me to sleep. It's what calmed me down enough to be able to sleep. And I really wouldn't have got through that without like God or without mum constantly encouraging me to pray and talk to God as well. And the difference between like when I'd been low and I'd pushed God away, and the difference between like drawing closer to God, it's just massive. And I remember once I forced myself into going to school. I didn't have to go. I was so low and I didn't have to go, like I didn't, but I just felt this power in me, and it was like, no, come on, we're going, we're doing it. And that was definitely God, like 100%. And when I was almost, feel like I was healed fully from it, was last year, an encounter at Soul Survivor with the Holy Spirit, and that was just incredible. So God was definitely in it all, even if I was pushing him away a bit.
So this is an interesting question, because people want to know what helps people and what doesn't. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
For you personally, what helped and what didn't?
So suppressing my emotions with boys really didn't help me. What did was just staying single and finding out who I am as a person instead of being who someone else wants me to be. Toxic friendships really didn't help either. Work environments that are really negative. People just constantly seeing the worst in other people. So it's definitely your surroundings. Throughout everything, I never stopped coming to church, which was a massive thing that definitely helped. So I was still surrounded by people that loved me and that weren't fake with me and that I could just be myself with. What else helped? Yeah, sometimes even like just coming to church, I didn't have to say that I was feeling low. People would just naturally cheer me up and I'd just be like, oh, amazing, I feel better. Like, sometimes you don't even have to say anything. And I remember once coming home on a Monday and just crying to Mum, and she was like, what's going on, what's happened? And I was like, I just want every day to be Sunday, like, just because of how much I love Sundays. But yeah, sometimes a walk really helps as well, even if it's like the last thing you want to do. Another thing that really helped me was for Christmas, I always end up getting a calendar thing, little notes thing, and I never know what to do with it. So what I did last year was just each day I wrote down different things, like even if it was just one thing that made me happy that day. So I've got like heart to heart with Mum at La Hogue. Okay, I had a really good week that week. But I looked the other day and it was just simple things like laughed with Laura from work, and I, what's the other one? Went to worship group and laughed with Sandrine. Like just really, really simple things that like completely changed my outlook on the day. What else helped?
I've got here lessons learned.
Lessons
don't know if you've
learned. Yeah, I do have that. But yeah, helped definitely, like making small targets for myself as well. That was a really good one. Lessons learned. So true friends will listen to you, but you also need to listen to them and what they're telling you and what they're saying. As long as they're true friends, they're going to tell you the truth. Asking for help doesn't mean that you're a failure. You're not defined by your mistakes. You are worthy, and rely on God because he's what will get you through.
Oh, no, where are you at now, Ellie?
Oh, well, I'm a different person now. No, I love my life. I'm surrounded by positive people. And anytime someone tries to be negative, I turn it positive anyway, which annoys some of my friends because they're like, I just want to moan. And I'm like, no, you won't. But yeah, I've definitely developed my relationship with God, and that's been incredible. Yeah, I'm at West Suffolk College, where God's really clearly called me to, so I'm just seeing where God takes me next.
That's cool. That's cool. Thank you. Give her a clap. I just thank Ellie for her honesty, really, in that. So.
There's an author, an American author called Anna Voskamp, and she writes that shame disappears or shame dies when our stories are told in safe places. And so there's something really powerful about sharing our stories. So Ellie, thank you so much in doing that. It's really powerful to hear people's stories, what people have been through, what their journey is. And just bearing in mind that actually everyone's journey is a bit different. So the first question then that I want to tackle tonight is, why does it occur? When we talk about mental distress, why does it occur? So I'm going to quickly go through these so we can get to the practical bit. So the first one that I want to say is, we are all susceptible to mental distress. It's not like we're on the edge and then one day we might just fall off necessarily. But actually it's that spectrum, and we're all susceptible to it. Why? Because we're all human. And there are all triggers. Everyone's got a trigger that might tip them into distress. Now, they could be for many different reasons. What I will say, though, that if you are a Christian, you are not exempt from mental distress. that actually there's a book in the Bible called Psalms, and it's a song book, and one of the authors in it, David, was prone to low moods, depression. People hated him, so he knew the highs and lows of life. And in it, he says, actually, even in the presence of my enemies, even in darkness and distress, God prepares a table for me. So actually, Christians are not exempt from dark days, opposition, feeling down, feeling gloomy, feeling kind of not at our best, not living life to the full. But what I want to say is that if you do know God, he prepares a table for you in the midst of that. And what that means is that you can still be nourished, you can still encounter God, you can still know joy and connection and wholeness, even in the midst of that darkness. So the next one then is that whole nature-nurture kind of predisposition. So in your handouts, everybody should have a pack like this on their chair. These are beautifully put together. There is one which we will continue to refer to across tonight, and it looks a little bit like this. Now, for some of you, you might have seen a form that looks like this many times. It's quite a general, everyday type form. You don't have one. There's a spare one here. Otherwise, you're going to have to get friendly with your neighbour. So, at the very top of that, there's what is called early experiences. Now, the theory goes like this, whatever your kind of psychological position, the theory goes that actually, as you are growing up and developing, things happen to you, whether or not they did actually happen, but if you perceived them as true, that can give you a lens through which you see yourself and through which you see the world. So when you're young, you start building up beliefs about who you are and about the world around you, and this acts as a bit of a blueprint for how you see life. So it could be then, this whole nature-nurture thing, that maybe you had a really anxious parent, and they were always saying, you're 3, not 13, what are you doing? Kind of, come away from the, trampoline or something, maybe overly anxious. And what message that sends sometimes to children, therefore, could be, the world is a dangerous place. I'm not going to be able to cope. So you might underestimate your ability to cope and overestimate the threat of the world. So early, kind of in our childhood, or as we get later on in life, quite often there'll be key things that happen to us. So it could be bereavement, could be loss of parents. A significant one could be bullying. Because actually in your identity formation, if people are saying things to you about who you are, that can be incredibly internalized and can really warp your belief about yourself. So even as I'm talking, if anything comes to mind, it doesn't have to be big and dramatic, but for some of you it might be things like trauma, abuse, bullying, but for others it might just be something about, actually I was the youngest child and I felt ignored. Or it could be I was the oldest child and I felt really put upon and I resented my parents for that. And actually, I wasn't that independent, I didn't get to go out as much, and I think life's a bit unfair, actually. I'm always put upon to do things. So whatever it is, things happen to us, particularly when we're young, and again, across the lifespan, and these give us the lenses through which we see things. So if anything comes to mind, kind of feel free to jot it down. The next one, then, is doing bad things as a result of doing bad things. So for Christians, you might call this sin, which is a bit of an archaic type of word, but really what it means is doing things wrong that breaks that relationship with God. Now, you don't have to believe in God to see the effects of this. So one client I was seeing came and had depression for about a year and had said through the course of talking that she'd had a broken relationship with her last surviving relative, wasn't talking to her children, and also wasn't talking with her partner as well. So life for her was pretty kind of bad. And because of some of the arguments that they'd had, both on her part but also on their part, some of these bad things in life, they weighed heavy on her. And it dramatically affected her behaviour, so she avoided seeing them. She avoided talking about it. She repressed her emotions because they were too painful to deal with. And before she knew it, she was in that state of nothingness, really. Everything being a bit flat and meaningless. So you don't have to believe in sin, in morality, to see the effects that actually not being at peace with people can weigh heavy on us. So the same chap in the Bible that I spoke about, David, who was a king, he wrote this. There is no soundness in my bones because of my wrongdoing. My guilt has overwhelmed me like a burden too heavy to bear. I am feeble and utterly crushed. I groan in anguish of heart. I confess my wrongdoings because I'm troubled by the things I've done wrong. And again, you don't have to believe in sin and morality to actually appreciate that sometimes we have things on our conscience and we need to put them right. So that can be one thing. Another one, spiritual attack. Now, if you're not Christian, bear with me on this one. If you believe that life is a gift, particularly from God, if you believe life is for living and living to the full, you might also believe that sometimes things in life seek to rob that from us, seek to take that away from us, seek to undermine that with us. Now, there's a book, it's a letter that was written to a church in a place called Ephesus, just here, and he says, actually, there's a battle that goes on, and it's a battle in our minds. And he says, actually, to stand firm in that when the day of kind of darkness and distress comes to you, put on a helmet of salvation. Now, what that really means is actually if the battle is where the mind is, mental distress, if the enemy or if darkness seeks to come and overtake you, knowing that you are helped and rescued by God, knowing your identity is in him can really protect you. So we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. And then finally, the kind of neurobiological, hormonal things as well have a huge part to play. And we see there's not only mental distress, things like Parkinson's to do with the dopamine receptors in the brain, so there can be hormonal imbalances, and this is how medication works, to seek to correct some of these things. So there can be a whole range of reasons. There's probably as many reasons why people have mental distress as there are people. I think what we can say, all of us here, wherever, kind of whatever walk of life you're from, is that everything is subject to decay. So everything is getting old, failing us, our bodies, our minds, they're all kind of, they will fail us at one point, hormonally, biologically, whatever that looks like. But for the Christian, we also believe that we are being made new. Now, what does this look like? Now, bear with me, this is the theology little bit of tonight, but it's so important because who we believe we are affects what we do, what we think, how we act, the way we experience life. So if I were to put it like this, when I was growing up, I was living for myself. Obviously, I was young, but I was at school, so I thought, okay, to be somebody in life, to know who I am, I need to work really hard, I need to be the best grades, I need to do the best I can, I need to do X, Y, and Z. I was living for myself. And then I thought, okay, to find out my identity, who the heck am I? I need to expose myself to different experiences. So I'm going to date different people, see what it's like. I'm going to try some drugs. I'm going to take a bit of alcohol. I'm going to just do whatever. And I'm just going to expose myself. I'm going to travel. I'm going to find myself. And this is something very much of this current generation, what people call the snowflake generation, the idea that you are totally individual. You can do what you want, when you want, however you want. The idea is that you live to yourself. Now, one of my naughty little secrets is that I absolutely love reality television, and my favourite is The Only Way is Essex, TOWIE, and in it there's a character called Lockie, so a real-life chap who's quite young, and in it he's a bit aggressive, and he says, after having this huge bust-up with his girlfriend and being very kind of rude to everybody, he says in the next scene, when he's supposedly apologising, he says, oh, well, it's just who I am. I've been like this since my parents' divorce. It's just who I am, and you out there, you need to like it or lump it, because it's who I am. Now, this symbolises what's kind of going on in this generation, this snowflake, however rude that is, that generation. The idea is that to find out who you are, you look at yourself, you look inward. Who am I? What do I like? What experiences do I need? And then you look up for affirmation and acceptance and confirmation of that. What that does, and I'll just suspend judgment on that, but what that does is it creates a very fragile identity where you're always looking inside and you're wanting acceptance and affirmation from people that change just as much as we do, from situations that change. And that creates a very transient, fragile identity, sense of self. In years gone by, how people found identity was they looked out here first, and then they looked inward. So, well, I'm a nurse, just like my mum's a nurse, and her mum was a nurse, and I belong to this village and part of that community. And then you would turn inward and say, right, I need to align myself with what's going on out there. again, I'm not making a judgment, both aren't necessarily healthy, but what it does do in this current generation is it creates fragile identities. Who are we? What is the world that we're living in? And that was very much me, particularly as I was growing up. It was that kind of, who am I? Which group do I belong to? That type of thing. There came a point in my life where I decided, and again, forgive the kind of the lingo, decided to become a Christian. And what that meant is I decided to, rather than following myself and looking to me to try and work out my identity and place in the world, I decided to look to Jesus. Now, what happened then was, in essence, I stepped away from that. I stepped away from looking inward, who am I? And I looked upward to Jesus. And the idea, the whole thing about tonight, chosen, not forsaken, I am who he says I am, is that God gives us an identity, one that does not change, one that is not fragile, one that does not depend on everyone's acceptance or affirmation of us. In fact, I could do nothing between now and eternity, and God would still love me and say that I am lovable just as much as, you know, if everybody did that. Does that make sense? So something happened then. Before I was living to myself, I had the mind of Elspeth, and now I'm no longer living to myself, but I'm living to Christ. There's a letter in the New Testament, in the Bible, and it was written by a chap called Paul to a small group of Christians who were living in Rome in about the second century. And he says to them, do not be conformed to the pattern of this world, i.e., do not be modelled after. Don't buy into trying to find your identity and having it fragile by looking inward and wanting acceptance and affirmation. Do not be modelled after that. Instead, be renewed by the transforming of your mind, or be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Now, what that means, so in the original language, he says, be metamorphosized. So here I've got my old self, and the idea is that something changes, like a caterpillar going into a chrysalis, becoming a butterfly. I'm still the same DNA. I never died. I'm still the same person that I was at 16, but I've metamorphosized. Something's changed in me. I've grown and I've developed. I've become different in my mind and my thinking. And the idea then that by the renewing of my mind, here I am now, today, with a bit more of a renewed mind. I'm still growing. I'm still developing. But there's something about having our minds revived, having our minds revived. This is really important before we kind of get onto the practical stuff, particularly if you're Christian here, because your identity is not rooted in looking at your biology, looking at your early experiences, things that happened to you, things that people said about you. It's no longer rooted in that. Your identity now is in Jesus and who he says you are. So while biology, hormones, everything like that still has an effect on you, actually, a change has occurred and we need to kind of continually live according to our new identity. Are you with me?
Yes?
Okay, great. So we're going to refer then to back to this. From self-awareness to self-management. If you know who you are, you can cope better with the things of life. You know what might be your triggers, what might trigger kind of emotions, distress in you. If you know who you are, you can better self-manage and monitor and prevent kind of that slippery slide, as it were, sometimes into mental distress that we're all susceptible to and that kind of everyday type of level. So, core beliefs. So if you were to go to get therapy with the NHS, one of the mainstream types of therapy is CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy. And this, as well as lots of other types of therapy, work on this model, that actually we have a core belief, and that is a fancy way of saying everything that I've said, who you believe you truly are when it comes down to it all. This is usually an I am statement. We can have positive core beliefs. I'm brilliant, and quite often if people experience bipolar, they'll probably have a very positive core belief and probably a very negative core belief, and they're always in conflict. Now, on the day-to-day, when we're feeling pretty all right, we're not really aware of this core belief stuff. We just exist. We do life. But when the pressure points come, when there's stress, when there's triggers, which are unique to us, they can be circumstantial as well, so exams, lack of sleep, things like that. When they come, suddenly we feel very exposed, and what it does is it pushes down to our core belief. That's why people react differently to different things in life, because we're very different. Now, What I would love for you to do is to start thinking about yourself, getting a bit self-aware if you feel safe to do that. You don't have to talk. If you don't want to talk, just think about it, maybe write something down, or if you don't want to write, just chat to the person next to you. What I'd love, and I'm going to do this along with you on this wonderful flip chart here, forgive my writing, is we're going to work out maybe what your core belief is. Now, this is something that can take ages and ages and ages to do, so it's kind of ambitious, but we're going to give it a go so you can think about it when you leave here. It will be an I am statement. So one way to work this out, I'll play role of me and therapist if you want, is by capturing a thought that you've maybe had today or recently this past week, and it's evoked to arouse some type of anxiety or a strong emotion in you. So it could be, for example, the thought then that I'm capturing is, what if no one turns up tonight? Ugh. Now, this is what we would call the downward arrow technique. So really what it is I'm trying to drill into, right, what's motivating this thought? What's motivating this, which has aroused some kind of anxiety in you? So that's me. Okay, what if nobody turns up tonight? Therapist Elspeth might say, okay, well, so what if nobody turns up tonight? What does that mean? Okay, right. So coming back to me, okay, well, what does it mean if nobody comes tonight? Right, well, it means no one wants to hear me. Okay, right, you can probably imagine what the therapist would say. Right, okay, so what, nobody wants to hear you? What does that mean? Okay, now coming back to me, then the downward arrow would say, it means I'm uninteresting. Uninteresting and not worth talking to. Okay, and again, what do you think the therapist might say to that? Yeah, so what if, you know, you're uninteresting, very compassionate therapist, so what if you're not interesting, you know, and not worth talking to? What does that mean? Who does that say you are? Well, then it might say, ooh, okay, gosh, I don't want you to know this, but it might mean I'm worthless or unimportant. So actually, behind this thought that just goes into my mind, I feel a bit butterflies in my stomach, gosh, what if nobody turns up tonight? It's actually a belief, unless people turn up, then I'm going to feel really exposed, and I'm going to feel really unimportant, and I'm going to feel really worthless. So does that make sense, how we can try to get to the core belief? So if I give you a couple of minutes, just have a little think about that. You can chat to the person next to you if you want to. I'll be down here if you want to. Great. Be something that you want to keep thinking about in the next few days, thinking about the thoughts that go through your mind. So quite often the early experiences we have link down to these core beliefs. Okay, so let's bring your attention back now. Okay, so quite often then your early experiences, the lens through which you see yourself in the world, make you susceptible or probably link to this core belief that you have, this I am statement. Okay, so it's probably something for you to think about the next few days. Try to become aware of the thoughts that you're thinking, what's going through your mind. And if that sounds a bit tricky, just notice. Maybe when you start feeling a bit tense, something changes in your body, or noticing maybe when your emotion changes, or suddenly you feel a bit teary, and then try to work out why, what went through my mind, what just happened, and then try and do this downward arrow technique, just to try and work out what it is. Now, this is important because, again, I'll say it again, belief impacts emotions, behaviours, things that we do, things that we feel, things that we see around the world. So what we would do, so what one of the best things to do is, this is about our identity, how we view ourselves, is to challenge it, is to make it more balanced. So if you have a belief then, I'm unlovable, we wouldn't just balance, we wouldn't say, oh, I'm loved by everybody, because that is probably not true. It's probably impossible that you'd be loved by everybody. But what we want to do is we want to balance it out. So if you presented a core belief, you said, actually, I do believe I'm unlovable, the next question would be, okay, what would it look like then if this is true? If you really are unlovable, would you ever get any birthday cards? When you start making predictions, okay, if this is true, and this can be very scary because actually this is probably a firmly held belief, which is why it is quite hard to kind of land upon in a kind of a setting like this. You'd make predictions, you'd look for evidence, and you'd say, okay, I might not get any birthday cards, people probably wouldn't give me eye contact, people probably actively avoid me if I'm unlovable, nobody would care how I am, even if I was really upset. So you start making predictions, and then you test to see if they're true. Right, somebody did give me eye contact today, I did get a lot of birthday cards in the post, and then from there you deduce, actually, okay, maybe I'm not totally unlovable. Maybe a better or a more balanced belief about myself would be, hey, some people love me, others don't. Kind of that's all right, okay, that's life, a bit more balanced. Now, as good as that is, do you still remember when I was saying we can look inward and then want affirmation and acceptance from out here? As good as that is, and as helpful as that is, looking for predictions and evidence, your value and your worth and your beliefs about yourself are still kind of given power to other people to confirm that or deny that. If you are a Christian and you do believe in a God who loves you, suddenly it doesn't matter about predictions and evidence. He loves you because he loves you because he loves you, end of. And yes, there is evidence. There's a lot of evidence for that. If you're interested, come and chat to me. So there's a lot of evidence, so we're not, you know, without reason here. But it's not dependent on that. Like I said, I could do nothing between now and the day that I die. I could see nobody, and that wouldn't change the fact that I'm lovable and I'm loved. So what I would suggest that if you are a Christian, so if you're not a Christian, I'd suggest trying to balance out those core beliefs. That's really good. Good thing to do. If you are a Christian, what I would say is that you turn to who God says you are and you balance out those core beliefs. So here's some examples about self-belief and about things about the world. So it could be the world is a dangerous place. So your early experiences may have taught you that the people who supposedly love you, you can't trust them. And that's a very natural response to that. If your primary caregiver isn't loving towards you, isn't nurturing towards you, actually that sends you signals that the world is a dangerous place and you can't trust people. Now, what does God say about that? God might say, actually, no matter what happens in life, he's never going to leave you, he's never going to forsake you, he's always going to be with you, his grace is enough for you, and he won't ever take you through something that you can't handle. Now, that's not saying, like I'm saying, it's not saying, oh, life's going to be rosy for you here on in, yay, kind of party all the time. No, it's still balanced. But it is firm. It's that firm identity that's not fragile. So you might be wondering then, what does this really have to do with mental distress? And as I keep saying, self-awareness can help self-management. The next thing down on this, what we call a formulation, it's just a kind of a very simple way of trying to order parts of us and our psyche. Assumptions and triggers. If we were to use this as an example, what if no one turns up tonight, I'm worthless. We all have a core belief, and because it's so personal to us, we want to protect ourselves from the world around us so that nobody ever makes us feel that we're worthless. So if this one is me then, gosh, I'm worthless. Okay, I never want to feel my core belief, I never want to feel I am worthless. So I'm going to put rules in, and these are kind of unconscious, but we all have them, expectations, what we want to see happen in life, ways to protect us, assumptions and rules for living. So if I'm worthless, and this basically has come from here, an assumption might be, right, well, if I'm interesting, have I written it there? If I'm interesting, or if people listen to me, then I'm worth being around. So usually our assumptions are if and then statements. If I do something, then nobody will have to know that I'm unlovable. So if I'm liked by everyone, if I'm really popular, if I've got this many friends on Facebook and this many events in my social calendar, then no one will know that I'm actually really unlovable, I'm really bad deep down. Or if everything goes right and I get the best grades in the class and I'm always invited to do things and people always ask my opinion, then nobody will really know that actually I feel a bit fraudulent and I feel like a bit of a failure. So does that make sense? These assumptions try to protect us. Now, this is when they get a bit problematic. If they become too rigid, so it's good, it's natural and it's healthy sometimes to protect our vulnerabilities, but if they become too rigid, i.e. if they get broken, so an example where people don't listen to me and I think, gosh, I'm really uninteresting, then suddenly I plummet all the way down to feeling worthless. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yeah? So the other example then is if I don't have all my ducks in a row, if everything's not perfect, then I feel like a failure. If, like that client I was seeing, if I remember that my son needs sugar in his cup of tea and I need to spread, you know, a thin layer of butter, then I will be a good mother and I'll never have to feel like a failure and a bad mother ever again. Does that make sense? So again, I'll just give you about a minute just maybe to think about the if, then, maybe use some of the rules for living that you live with. At somebody, it's quite often because we feel a bit violated by them. They've probably broken one of our assumptions or rules for living. Get everyone's attention again in the middle. So if we were to do this together, if I said to you, if in a situation, if I believe that I'm unlovable, and I have a rule for living that if people always initiate conversation with me, then I'm accepted by them. Now, what happens in a situation that I go into and everybody ignores me? How do I react to that? What might my emotions be in response? Yeah, so behaviour might be avoidance. I'm going to leave this situation, it's too painful, yeah? What might some of my emotions or feelings be in that situation? Yeah, so that's a great thought. I'm not going to go back there, actually. And then that leads on to a behaviour, avoidance. Yeah. What about a feeling in that moment? Yeah, hurt, loneliness, sadness. Yeah. So can we see how our beliefs impact upon our behaviours, our emotions, everything like that? Now, that is what we would call the negative cycle or vicious cycle. And I'm sure some of you here are very familiar with this type of language. So I just want everyone to become a bit more familiar with it. So the idea then, when we talk about us being triggered, quite often it triggers to this cycle. You've got it on your paper, but I've also included up here bodily sensations, particularly with anxiety. For children, it's that constant stomach ache. Oh, why do you still have a stomach ache? Probably because something is making them feel a bit anxious. For adults, it could be things like muscle tension in the neck. Oh, I've got a really bad neck. It could be shooting pains in your arm. Tightness of chest, it could be total exhaustion. So these are some of the bodily sensations. Behaviours, crying is a behaviour. And it comes maybe from an emotion of feeling hurt, overwhelmed, happy even. We can happy cry. So when we talk about mental distress, quite often people that come to services, that they are stuck in this cycle. And I say it's a cycle because if my value about myself is based on affirmation from others, but if I, as was suggested, I run away, I socially avoid, I avoid people, then what am I doing? I'm perpetuating that cycle because I'm never going to be affirmed by anybody ever. And then what it does is it snowballs and it becomes bigger and bigger and harder and harder. Now, the thing that we want to do to get out of that cycle is to break the cycle, basically. And you do that by challenging certain behaviours, certain thoughts that we have. And this is why self-awareness is really important, because if you are aware of what they are easier to challenge, they are easier to prevent the cycle from developing and perpetuating. So we'll look at that in about 5 minutes. We've now got a bit of a toilet break, so nip to the loo, grab yourself a hot drink and a bit of cake. I'll be down here if you did want to have a little chat about anything, but we'll come back with some Q&A.